Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 5th of March, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, finally it's Friday. Yay.
I feel like sometimes it's more of a more declaring victory than anything else, and this week I definitely feel that. So, yeah. As always, because it is Friday and Andrew is here, it is now Security Friday. So we'd like to start with an interesting topic about Google and Google's relationship with cookies.
Yeah, so I think this was back in November. Google had published something about this new project called the Privacy Sandbox. And earlier this week, they gave a little bit more information about its goals. So essentially, they want, well, what they're saying is that they want to end third-party cookies because they say that would make the web more private. Mm-hmm. They said, we are confident that with continued iteration and feedback, privacy preserving and mechanisms like the sandbox can sustain a healthy ad-supported web in a way that will render third-party cookies obsolete. Now, I know what you're thinking. Google wanted to make the web more private. So just for some other commentary on the other side, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they say their proposal is a terrible idea. So Google, it sounds like Google is trying to come up with a bunch of alternatives, just like here are some examples and ideas of what we could have in place of these cookies. And it sounds like the main one is called Federated Learning of Cohorts, or FLoC. And EFF says this is perhaps the most ambitious and potentially most harmful. And the way I understand it is that FLoC would get rid of third-party cookies, but it would just move that tracking inside the browser itself. So more first-party tracking, I think, which is still not private.
Yeah, not better. Like, you know, like on its face, it seems better, but in real life, it maybe is kind of not better. So that's that. I think this is going to be interesting because this is going to continue to evolve. We've seen it from Apple. We've seen it now from Google wanting to do this. We've seen more and more and more of this as this continues to shift and change. And of course, we will tell you all about it here on Security Friday. Right now, we have a quick PSA about the operating system on your phone and your iPad.
Yes, I think, let's see, a couple weeks ago, I think it was me and Dave were on talking about some cool stuff we thought is coming in iOS 14.5. Yep. And just a quick update, the public beta and developer beta 3 for 14.5 is now out for people to download. Okay. So it's getting closer. Mm-hmm.
It's becoming imminent, I would say. We haven't heard a lot of complaints about beta 2, so I imagine beta 3 is going to be not too bad overall. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things like, you know, there's a very good chance we're going to get this very soon. I know we said that when we did the preview, but yeah, should be interesting.
Yeah.
So we had an interesting, it's not really an opinion piece, but the way it was written seemed, I guess, like there was definitely a point of view. And it was about Apple and the iOS walled garden.
Yeah, I thought this was a something good to think about. So Patrick Howell O'Neill wrote this for MIT Technology Review. And he shared this argument from someone else. I think it was a developer. Mm-hmm. Who said Apple's walled garden is kind of a double-edged sword when it comes to security, because better security is, of course, better for all of us. But he argues that while the iPhone security is getting tighter, the best hackers have their own millions to buy or develop zero-click exploits that let them take over iPhones invisibly. And the way I translated it in my link teaser was, Apple's lockdown systems, if you think about it, they naturally select for only the best hackers. And these best hackers have the skill to create the most devastating hacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, just something interesting to think about.
Yeah, and that was sort of the interesting thing about it was, like, because Apple's good enough at doing this, like, you're only going to get the finest quality of attack on your device, which, you know, like, which sounds pretty good, but then, you know, you stop and think about it and go, wait, that actually sounds worse. So, yeah, that bit seemed not so great. that part was the part I definitely, like, stopped and thought about it and went, that doesn't... yeah, not really sure. So, yeah, but speaking of speaking of data on your phone and making sure that you're keeping that information safe from people, we had a really interesting survey of cloud data.
So this is a good piece of news, kind of a reminder as to, you know, why you should use a password manager and, I don't know, private notes, whatever privacy tools are out there to keep your data safe. Because I think Wired is the one that wrote this up, and they say researchers at Zimperium, which is a security firm, they analyzed 1.3 million Android and iOS apps to look for common cloud misconfigurations, like whatever servers are using on the back end, if there's any errors with that, like AWS or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure. And they found almost 84,000 Android apps and 47,000 iOS apps have errors. Now, of those numbers, they say they found misconfigurations in 14% of those totals. So 11,877 Android apps, 6,608 iOS apps. They have errors in a way where they are exposing users' personal information, which can include passwords and even, like they say, medical information.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So that's fun. it's this week in data breaches, basically. And basically for the scale on that one, and it was configuration. This wasn't like somebody gained access to something that they shouldn't have gained access to. I mean, they did, but it wasn't like they were trying to. It was, you know, nobody reset the admin password, and when you typed admin, you got in and got to see all this stuff, right? It's more that kind of
something
thing.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, fantastic. That's always, it's always really nice when that's what's happening. So we have a little bit more to talk to you about today, but since we're about halfway through the show, I am here to take a minute and talk to you about our sponsor today. And our sponsor today is She's Birdie. And Birdie is a personal safety alarm, and it's made to be very easy to carry and very easy to use. You can activate it with a quick pull. There's a little like ring in the top with kind of a pull tab out of it. And when you give that a yank, which is easy to do, it's like the right amount of resistance. So like you can't really do it accidentally. But when you do want to, it's pretty easy to do. And when you do that, you are treated to a 130 decibel alarm and a flashing strobe light. It's super bright and super duper loud. It is the perfect way to draw attention to a situation, which is what you're trying to do with something like this. And unlike pepper spray or other sorts of things that you can carry around and kind of spray at people that can blow back in your face, this doesn't do any of that. So it's very nice. You can carry it with you. It comes in a bunch of different colors. They're all pretty nice. And it comes with a keychain, like a key ring clip. So you can hook it to your keys or hook it to your bag. And it looks sort of like one of those little square battery chargers, like those rectangular battery that you use to charge the power in your phone, or like the hand sanitizer that lots of people started carrying around lately. So it looks pretty inconspicuous if you want to carry it around. And it's, so you know, it's a nice size, it's pretty easy to hold. Like I said, it's the right amount of resistance to make sure you don't trip it accidentally. And right now, She's Birdie is offering my listeners 15% off your first purchase. So if you go to she'sbirdie.com/TDO, that's She's Birdie, SHESBIRDIE.com/TDO. You get 15% off your first purchase over at she'sbirdie.com/TDO. We'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, we have another interesting topic here with Brave, which is a browser we've talked about on previous episodes, because it's one that's trying very much to be a privacy first browser. And they are now wanting to get into the search engine business.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. TechCrunch wrote this up, and they say Brave, the privacy-focused browser, it was co-founded by someone who used to work for Mozilla, and they are getting to launch their own on-brand search engine for desktop and mobile. So I'm they say own brand, so I'm sure it'll be called, you know, just the Brave search engine. And they're doing this by, they announced the acquisition of this open source search engine developed by the team behind something called Qlix, they say it's now defunct, but it was an anti-tracking search browser combo, and the search engine was called Tailcat. And one of the specific things they say is that Tailcat does not collect IP addresses or use personally identifiable information to improve search results. So I think it's good news, because not only are people getting another private alternative to Google, but it's also probably going to start bringing the heat to some other private search engines, like maybe DuckDuckGo. So they're going to be getting some competition.
Yeah, and that was the thing I thought was interesting about this bit of news, is the part where they're basically not trying to compete with Google for search engine mindshare. They're trying to compete with DuckDuckGo, so which I think is a very interesting stance to take right now.
Also, just one more thing. So they say Tailcat is a fully independent search engine with its own search index built from scratch. So that sounds like it'll have its own crawlers crawling around the web, looking and indexing for stuff, instead of something like DuckDuckGo, which I think uses some Bing search results.
Yeah, I think it's based on something else. Yeah, they're not. Yeah. I don't think DuckDuckGo is building their own index. I think they're relying on someone else's. If you're with DuckDuckGo, or if you know definitively, please let us know at observations@backobserver.com, because I want to make sure we're giving right information to people. But I know, Andrew, you're a DuckDuckGo user, right?
Yeah. I think I've been using it for probably several years now.
Yeah, I have for quite a while, and I don't have trouble with the results. Like, I know a lot of times, you know, in the olden days when there were lots of search engines, you could have a really hard time getting decent results depending which one you were using. And that doesn't seem to be a problem anymore. So I've not ever had complaints with the information I got from DuckDuckGo.
Results are good.
And in fact, I have my iOS devices all use DuckDuckGo as the default. You don't have to keep Google if you don't want to. We've mentioned it here, but I think it was a really long time ago when we were still sort of trying to get Security Friday up and running. So if you go into the Safari preferences on iOS, you can tell it what search engine you want to use as your default. And you can change that to something else if you don't want it to be Google. So anyway, so we have one last thing to talk about today, and it's a very interesting thing that Apple has put together. Apple does this occasionally, where they will put up a nice web page and sort of aggregate a bunch of different information from all over their website and put it all in one place for you. And they recently did the Apple Security Guide, you know, for like what happens with your data, that sort of thing. We talked about that here. And they've got a new one that's called Apple for Kids. And I feel like it's a little bit misleading because a lot of what it talks about is things that you can do if you have family sharing or a family group. So this doesn't necessarily just have to be about kids. So, yeah. But it does say right at the top, like there's a nice little picture of playing with an iPad and I think it's some Lego Mindstorm or something. There's a microscope on the desk and it says manage your family group. And that's a link to a support article for how to do that. If your child forgot their passcode, which is a link to another support article on how to resolve that. And if your child bought something by accident, and there's a support article for that too. So then, but it steps, like all of the links on the page are for things to step you through each phase of this. So how to set up family sharing. If you don't have that set up already, you can do that. How to set up a device specifically for someone else that's sort of one of the family users in that family sharing group. How to set up the Apple Watch, particularly for someone who doesn't have their own iPhone. So if you're doing the family setup we heard about with WatchOS 7, there's steps on how to walk through that. How to fix your child's birth date if you need to update it. And then how to keep track of activities, like making sure that they have to ask permission before they buy anything, or how to locate a lost device, which is always a handy thing to know anyway. I don't have kids and I need Find My on the regular. So just keep in mind, like, that might be good for you to just click through and read anyway. You can set limits on in-app purchases. You can adjust things in screen time. You can use the parental controls on a device you give to someone else in your family. I feel like all of this is also helpful if you have parents. Then you can set up the family sharing, and if somebody's tied to your credit card for their purchases, you may want the permission to show up anyway. Find My is always a good idea. And a lot of people use screen time for themselves. Like, there's only so much doom scrolling I personally can take. and so, you know, screen time makes it so that you only get a certain amount at a time, which can be pretty useful as well. So Apple's got this new page. We've got a link to it in the show notes. We'll have a, we'll link out to the piece that Charlotte wrote about this. Thanks, Charlotte, for picking it up. And it's just a bunch of, like I said, it's a bunch of different links to handy stuff that Apple has all through their support library, and sometimes it can be really hard to track down the actual piece that you want, so having them lay it out like this is very helpful. So that's been good for that so far. So
yeah, it's great.
That's a whole lot of security news and updates today. So I think
we made it.
We did. I think we're gonna call it. That's gonna do it for us today. So Andrew, as always, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a good weekend, everyone.
Indeed, have a good weekend. And if you have questions, if there are security things you'd like for us to talk about, if there's something you want us to dig into, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or comments in the show notes. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. Have a great weekend, everybody. I would like you all, in the meantime, before I talk to you again on Monday, to be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.